Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. It was an attention-grabbing billboard on 315, and that was the point. In giant letters it read, "Dear OSU, we are Buckeyes, not Bullseyes. Signed, your nurses." Concerns about workplace safety prompted the billboard and led nurses to stage informational pickets at the hospital and at a trustees meeting. The two sides recently settled on contract terms, but the issues raised, from workplace violence to staffing ratios to worries about AI, reverberate at hospitals across the U.S. Rick Lucas has been a registered nurse since 2004 and serves as the president and executive director of the Ohio Nurses Association. ONA represents nearly 200,000 registered nurses in the state. He also served for 5 years as the president of the Ohio State University Nurses Association, which just ratified its new contract. Welcome to All Sides, Rick.
Thank you.
So the billboard I just mentioned, it certainly caught the attention of motorists on 315 during the contract negotiations. The message spelled out on the billboard was pretty stark, you know, that nurses are human targets. Why did they decide to go in that bullseye? What did they mean by a bullseye there?
So back in December, there was a violent patient that came into the emergency department. There was no screening that took place for over an hour. And after they got the patient situation under control and took them back and searched the patient, they found a loaded firearm and an extra clip in there on their person. During that altercation, that patient looked directly, made eye contact with nurses and said, "I'm going to kill you." And so he was, you know, 20 feet away from somebody and threatening them while he had a loaded weapon. And OSU's response just was really inadequate. They told us that they had safety protocols in place and that no changes really needed to happen. And we weren't going to accept that. We weren't going to accept that for ourselves or for our patients.
So he was able to walk in with the gun. There was no metal detector or anything that got set off.
So he came in through the EMS entrance, and so that's completely unprotected. So if you come in, you walk into the emergency department, you go through security. If you come in by EMS, which a lot of patients do, obviously, you could come in with a loaded firearm and it not be caught for, you know, over an hour.
Okay. So some of the issues that came up in contract negotiations are not exclusive to Ohio State. We're going to get into those issues later. But I wanted to start with some highlights. Workplace safety is a major issue. So can you give us a better idea of what you're talking about there besides this one instance where the man made it in with the loaded weapon and the extra clip? What dangers do nurses face on the job?
So in addition to that gun coming in, there was another patient at OSU East that just like a month later had came in and they found another gun in the CAT scanner. So that prompted us to file a complaint.
Wait, they sent them for a CAT scan and they had it on their person?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. And okay. It showed up on the film.
Oh, okay. That should have been caught earlier. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
So they were well within the department receiving care. And it was only caught incidentally that they had a firearm on their person. So OSU being a public employer, we fall under the Public Employee Risk Reduction Program, which is housed under the Ohio Department of Workers' Compensation. And so it's like the state level OSHA. And so we filed a complaint with them to push OSU to make meaningful change, because even though we worked through contract negotiations and they agreed to put metal detectors at the main entrances, they still refused to do anything with that EMS entrance. And so now PERP has finished their investigation, and so OSU is going to be issued a hazard letter where the state is going to mandate that they make those changes to secure that EMS entrance, to keep weapons from coming in through that access point. But in addition to weapons coming in, you know, we're physically, verbally, and sexually assaulted on the job. And so, we had a nurse that was punched and dragged around by her ankles at one of the hospitals. So we're not talking about shoving or pushing or yelling. Like, we're talking about real violence that's happening in our hospitals.
Do you feel like Ohio State needs to provide more security? Do there need to be more security guards around to help with something like that? Because, I mean, you can't screen any patient to say, like, are you going to attack us? Right? So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of it is not completely known, and there are times where there are signs and we don't have the resources that we need. Mm-hmm. And so we absolutely need more security that's readily available. When you know you have somebody who's violent, there should be a security person on the floor ready to respond in seconds, not 10 minutes.
So being able to call security and say, this one's worrying me a little bit, can you stand by? That
yes,
kind of thing. Okay.
Absolutely.
So the idea of workplace safety, I mean, it's not just a concern at Ohio State. I mean, this is all hospitals. Do other hospitals, you know, this whole not protecting the EMS entrance, are all hospitals guilty of that? Or is it Ohio State uniquely doesn't screen there?
It's a industry-wide problem. Mm-hmm. So we just had an issue at Altman Alliance, which is...
That's in, let me see, Stark County. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they had directed their nurses to security wand patients. And so...
The nurses security wand patients.
To wand them for weapons. And so, you know, if you're out practicing target practice or on a range, there aren't people around. If you are screening a patient with a metal detector wand, you're expecting to find a weapon. And so knowing how to safely handle that, in addition to all of the, you know, that eroding that nurse-patient relationship, you know, we're not enforcement. We're caring professionals. So we got the hospital to move away from that. But that's also the same system that there was the patient in the emergency department in Canton that disarmed the security guard and shot an employee in the stomach. And so we have submitted a demand to bargain there with Altman Hospital over safety concerns, because there too, we need metal detectors, we need security personnel, and we need training to keep everyone safe.
So in this most recent contract negotiation with Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, I mean, you had the billboard, there was a lot talked about. Mm-hmm. What, obviously you approved the contract, so they had to have answered some of it. So what did Ohio State say that they're going to do regarding safety?
So we got a new article in the contract, and it requires the medical center to furnish and maintain safe working conditions in the workplace, which is a pretty broad standard, but it's something that we can enforce through the grievance and arbitration process to hold them accountable.
So if a nurse feels it's not safe, they feel that they have more recourse. They can actually like complain, rather than just complain, they can like file something.
Yeah, file a formal grievance, mm-hmm. and then have management have to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And then if we have to, take it to a third party to decide what that language means. So unfortunately, just like we had to work through the state to force OSU's hand to secure that EMS entrance, this gives us another avenue to fight to keep ourselves safe and keep our patients safe.
We reached out to Ohio State Wexner Medical Center to join the show today. They were unable to make anyone available. However, they provided a lengthy statement. I can't read the whole statement because it is very lengthy, but they said... they said that the medical center's rate of workplace safety incidents per patient admission has remained flat, and that is due to everyone working together and doing their part to prevent and mitigate safety incidents. Do you feel like there has been some work done in recent months? This idea of like the workplace safety incidents per patient, I mean, I'm sure you want it to be zero, but that's impossible in the world we live in.
So we know that, you know, we might not get to zero incidents of workplace violence. But, you know, putting out a statement like that is very similar to what they said whenever we were raising the alarm about guns coming into the hospital. They're minimizing it and acting like there's nothing to see here. There absolutely is an issue. There's more they can do. There's more they can do to support staff. You know, one of the things that we got in the contract, too, was the ability that if you were assaulted at work, that you could safely leave without getting an attendance occurrence. Mm. So there were times where people were assaulted that hospital leadership threatened them with disciplinary action if they filed a police report. You know, that's been a while. That's not the case anymore. Where people had their glasses and different things broken, by patient assaults, and we had to fight with the employer to replace that. And so there's a lot of harm that befalls health professionals in the patient care environment. And, you know, the executives that make the decisions aren't subject to that same level of violence that we have. Mm-hmm. They're off in their executive suites. They're completely removed from the environment that their decisions create. And so it's really easy for them to put out a statement that says the violence rates are flat. If we're coming here and saying that there's one instance of a nurse being punched in the face and drug around the unit by her ankles, I don't know how they can make a statement like that straight faced and act like things are okay, because it's not.
The statement also says, this spring we announced the installation of a weapons detection system and personnel at hospital entrances. That project is on track for late summer. Is this what you're talking about the EMS entrance?
So they had committed to secure the other entrances, but they were still telling us that they weren't going to do anything with the EMS entrance. Mm. So we're waiting for the state to issue that hazard letter so that we can find out what accountability plan there will be to stop dangerous weapons from coming into that EMS entrance.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the nursing profession with registered nurse Rick Lucas, who is also the president of the Ohio Nurses Association. I mean, this what we're talking about is very heavy stuff. And, you know, nurses being attacked, there being weapons in the hospital. But tell me about you becoming a nurse. Do you enjoy being a nurse?
Yeah, I love being a nurse. Mm-hmm. I love being able to make a difference and support patients and advocate for patients. And, you know, that's what I really enjoy about my role now, is being able to advocate for nurses, because we generally don't do a good job advocating for ourselves. And so to be able to do that role in a way where I'm able to advocate for nurses and patients at the same time is really, really rewarding. But I've spent my entire career in critical care, and I still work part-time at the bedside at OSU as a rapid response nurse.
Now, you've been a nurse since 2004. Do you feel like the worries about violence and the issues with violence, are they worse now? Or 20 years ago, was it still there?
You know, there was still violence that we faced, but not to the degree that we do now and the frequency. And so it's been an ongoing problem, but definitely, you know, that was exacerbated with the pandemic. And then unfortunately, you know, we have policymakers and people out there pushing all of these wild conspiracy ideas, and they erode the trust that people have in us, that we're there to help them and not harm them. And so that also creates mistrust and escalates the violence in our hospitals.
There's been a lot of talk about nursing shortages across the country, but that isn't quite the case in Ohio right now. There are enough licensed nurses, but maybe just not enough doing bedside nursing, which you described that you do. Is that correct?
Yeah. So according to a survey in 2022 by Health Resources and Services Administration, there are over 40,000 licensed registered nurses in Ohio that aren't working as nurses. And looking at projections, by the year 2037, we're going to have nearly a 20% surplus of registered nurses in the state of Ohio.
That's something we haven't heard in a while. Okay, yeah.
So what that means is there's not a shortage of capable registered nurses in the state. There is a shortage of safe employers, safe jobs for nurses to take. That nurses go into this work to heal and to help people. And so when you're in an environment where you're not able to meet patient care needs, that's a really, really tough place to be. You're not just disappointing somebody. We're talking about missing a subtle cue in somebody's, assessment, and missing a diagnosis, an early diagnosis of sepsis, and having somebody end up on dialysis the rest of their life, or a subtle neurological change that signals a stroke. And those minutes mean recovery for patients, meaningful recovery. And so when people walk away from a shift and they don't feel like they were able to meet those demands in a meaningful way, or that they missed something and caused somebody irreparable harm, that's not compatible with how we feel about the work that we do. And so a lot of people have made the decision that they can't work in that environment anymore.
Do you feel like this new contract and this agreement that you have with Ohio State that they're going to do better, but now also you can file a grievance more directly related to safety? Is this going to help? I mean, are you going to be able to tell someone who's brand new day one, like, you're going to love bedside nursing, stay here, stay with us?
Yeah, I mean, we established safe patient ratios on our contract in 2019. We're working to address workplace violence. And what I would say is that nurses across the state can certainly see OSU's dirty laundry, because we cast it out there for the world to see, because we're going to expose it and we're going to fight for change. When nurses are in other environments where they don't have a protected union voice, they have to suffer in silence, and we don't do that. So even though we have very public fights with OSU about these major issues, we're not accepting it. We're making progress and we're making change and trying to elevate working conditions for everybody. And so that is our goal, that being a bedside nurse is a sustainable lifelong career at OSU Wexner Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we're on the path to making that happen.
And we're running out of time, but real quick, there was one part of the contract that I just need you to explain, because I didn't understand. The use of artificial intelligence was in the contract. AI has emerged as a union concern. Can you tell me about AI being used in nursing and your concern there?
Yeah, so, you know, having those clinical technologies can be a great to augment resources, but they should never replace human touch. They should never replace human judgment. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about is allowing that technology into the patient care environment, but not in a way where it replaces registered nurses, because AI is not going to be able to bring you pain medicine. AI is not going to be able to comfort you like a human can. And so that's what we're talking about.
Okay. So having AI maybe help you with, you know, fill out a chart more quickly, that's fine. But the actual AI is not going to replace a nurse.
Correct.
Got it. Well, that was Rick Lucas, registered nurse and president and executive director of the Ohio Nurses Association. Rick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about the future of nursing with a professor at the School of Nursing at Ohio University in Athens. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Looking for a convenient and easy way to manage your charitable giving? Consider creating a donor-advised fund. A donor-advised fund helps you easily manage and keep track of the incredible organizations you support, like 89.7 NPR News. You select your investment options and grow your fund tax-free. For more information, contact our advancement team by visiting wosu.org/legacy.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Today, we're talking about the profession of nursing, the challenges, the changes, and the future. The pandemic exacerbated long simmering issues in the field, from workplace safety to staffing to technology. And we wanted to shift gears a bit to find out how nursing schools are preparing the next generation of caregivers. Joining us now is Patty Snyder, an associate director of undergraduate nursing at Ohio University in Athens, which also has 5 regional campuses. It's regarded as one of the top programs in the state. Welcome to All Sides, Patty.
Thank you, Amy.
So can you give us a sense of Ohio University's nursing program, you know, student enrollment? Is it growing? Is it stagnant? How many nurses are you cooking up in there?
it's growing very much so. In our Athens BSN group, we can accept every year 170 students. And this coming year, we'll have a total of about 430 students enrolled in the on-campus program here in Athens. And then we do have our regional campuses have a BSN program, and many of them have an associate degree program as well. And so their enrollment is about 100 students per campus as far as that goes. Ohio University School of Nursing, we also offer our master's program, master's in education, leadership, and then we have our nurse practitioner program as well. We have about 480 students in the MSN program. Mm-hmm. And then at our Dublin campus, we have our DNP program. DNP, we have about 140 students in that.
Okay, I got BSN was Bachelor's in the Science of Nursing, but what's what's DMP?
ADN mm-hmm. is our associate degree program.
Okay.
And those are on our branch campuses. DNP is a doctorate in nursing practice, and we offer that at our Dublin campus. And then MSN, a master's in nursing, is offered. It is through our Dublin campus as well as online. And then recently, Ohio University partnered with Ohio Health at our Dublin campus, and we are offering a nurse anesthesia program. That was brand new this past fall. The second cohort will be entering this fall as well. So our programs are all growing.
Yes. So my mom, just to talk personally for a second, she spent 40 years as a nurse, a bedside nurse at a hospital in Pittsburgh. And she, back in the day, she went to nursing school in the 70s. It was a 2-year program. She got an associate's degree. So what you're describing sounds much more involved. Now, I know we're a long time from the 70s, but is it that do nurses do more now? Do nurses have to know more? Tell me about the extra education.
Well, for the associate degree nurses, such as your mother, Ohio University has an RN to BSN program, meaning you're a registered nurse with an associate degree and you want to go ahead and get your bachelor's degree. That is strictly online through Ohio University. And we have about almost 3,000 students in that program. But usually for leadership positions, most hospitals and organizations do require a bachelor's degree in nursing. So that's to help those nurses who want to achieve that, given the opportunity. And it's very doable. You can work while you're going to school.
What are you hearing from students? Why are they choosing a nursing as a major? Because, I mean, we heard, you know, the pandemic highlighted how vital healthcare workers are, but also, you know, frontline nurses, it was just 5 years ago, but, you know, it also highlighted how hard healthcare can be. So what are you hearing from students who are deciding to become a nurse?
You know, the thing we want to hear is they want to help people. They want to go out and make a difference, a life of service. But on the other hand, I know in the previous, in your previous communication with the gentleman from the Ohio Nurses Association, there are jobs out there, but people are leaving the bedside. And so we are trying to instill in our students love of bedside nursing. And we hope we're doing that with the clinical instructors that we are using in the program. We are showing that it's to love bedside nursing. It's a pleasure to be a bedside nurse. It's a pleasure to take care of people at the bedside. But we're also hearing from students that, you know, you can make a good living as a nurse. So also with wanting to take care of people and a life of service, you also want to be able to make a living, and you're able to do that as a nurse. Also, as your life changes, your job can change. Nurses can work full-time, part-time. You can work night shift sometimes. It's as your life changes, you can change. You can change your job. So that's very appealing to be able to do that.
Now, you mentioned in the last segment with Rick Lucas from the Ohio Nurses Association, mm-hmm. we talked about how there is no longer a nursing shortage in Ohio. I'm sure your program had something to do with that, with building up our nurses. But there is a shortage in those pursuing bedside nursing. So can you talk a little bit more about that? How do you entice people to become frontline in nursing?
Well, hopefully, again, through our clinical instructors showing that they love bedside nursing, and showing a love for that bedside nursing hopefully makes a difference. We are also in our leadership course. We talk about those aspects that you discussed earlier, workplace violence, as well as staffing ratios. We want them to be aware when they get out there, what to expect, and hopefully we're helping them to learn to deal and cope with such things.
Yeah, I have to imagine that it's hard to train in a classroom the issues of workplace safety, staffing ratios, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What kind of on-the-job training are you able to get for your nurses ahead of graduation?
Here at Ohio University School of Nursing, we have it's almost brand new. It's about 5 years old now, but we have a simulations suite with 6-bed simulation area. And so we tell our students, you know, that the classroom is where you learn the book work. And then we have nursing labs. We go into the nursing labs and learn the skills, how to start an IV, how to give an injection, how to change a bandage, those things. And then we also have simulation. And that's where you put what you learned in class and what you learned in lab, you put that together. And we give the students a scenario, like a play script. And they go in and they take care of the patient, which can be a standardized patient or a real person, but usually we use mannequins. And they go in, they're given this script or this scenario to take care of this patient. And for every clinical and lab course that we offer, each student has to participate in 2 simulations. We have 9 clinical lab courses, so they have to perform 18 simulations before they graduate. They also have over 500, about 550 clinical hours throughout the program. That means they go to the hospital with a clinical instructor and take care of real patients. So they have over 500 hours of clinical and almost 200 hours of lab. So that's how they get that practice in before they go and graduate and then take their NCLEX exam.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the future of nursing with Patty Snyder, Associate Director of Undergraduate Nursing at Ohio University in Athens. What made you decide to become a nurse?
I wanted to be a nurse since the time I was 5 years old, and that I never wavered. I've been a nurse 45 years. And, you know, back when I was 5 years old, there was, we really didn't have hospice, or home health. We had a county health nurse. My grandmother was, in her last stage of life, and my, mother was taking care of her. And, a county health nurse came to check on her, and I went with my mother to answer the door, and she had on a white uniform, white hose, white shoes, her cap. But the thing was how nice she was to my mother, how nice she was to my grandmother, took excellent care of my grandmother. And I decided right then I wanted to be a nurse, and I never wavered.
Yeah, we might have done away with the all white and the white caps now.
Exactly. But, yeah. Thank goodness we're wearing even now we have wrinkle free scrubs.
Amazing.
So yes. That's a pleasure to be able to wear wrinkle free scrubs and uniforms.
Now, Ohio Health recently announced a program to help ease student debt for those who pursue healthcare careers. It's similar to other programs across the U.S. in partnership with a financial lender. Are you familiar with these programs? What are you doing to help with the debt to entice people to go into a nursing career and get these degrees?
Well, we do partner with Ohio Health. We send students to clinical at Ohio Health. And then this summer, several of our junior students participated in the summer program at Ohio Health. And if a student works for Ohio Health, they can get tuition help. Mm-hmm. And also scholarships. There are scholarships here at Ohio University for nursing students. And so we let potential students know about those programs and help them apply.
To entice more future nurses into the bedside program at a hospital where the need is greatest, are you hearing from recent graduates? Are hospitals paying well enough for a first-year nurse?
Many of them, if you will sign on used to be 2 years, some it's 1 year now, will help reimburse your student loan. Mm.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot of that is going on. And, you know, one hospital will start it and then another one will, you know, seek to come on board. So many of our students are reaping that benefit.
What about rural healthcare? It's facing unique challenges. Athens is in a more rural setting. Are there efforts to encourage nursing students to go to rural hospitals as well?
Yes, we have placements at probably about 10 rural organizations here in southeastern Ohio. And, you know, a lot of our students come from the city, but many of our students, once they attend clinical in our rural hospitals, they do enjoy it. A lot of our students like to stay here in Athens, and we do have Ohio Health Oblinus here in Athens. We have Holzer Medical Center in Gallipolis, Marietta Memorial, Fairfield Medical Center. They love the clinicals that are provided, and many of them stay.
You told your story of how you wanted to be a nurse since you were 5 years old. And so to keep the recruitment up, do you reach out to like K-12 education to talk about healthcare careers or nursing as a career at young ages?
Yes, we do. When we are invited, we love to go and tell students about nursing. And many of our regional campuses, you know, are open during the summers, and they have what we call nursing boot camp and bring high school students in to see the program and to talk about nursing. But no, we are glad to come and talk to us high school students about nursing. And anyone that would like a tour of our beautiful facility here at Athens, please reach out. We love to show off our space.
That's Patty Snyder, Associate Director of Undergraduate Nursing at Ohio University in Athens. Thank you so much for your time today, Patty.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Coming up, nursing through the national lens and how other states are responding to workplace concerns. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Summer is here. Join WOSU at family-friendly community events and festivals all summer long. For all dates and locations, visit our events page, wosu.org/events.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Nurses at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center embarked on a public crusade as a part of their recent contract negotiations. They staged informational pickets at a university trustee meeting, and they picketed outside the hospital. They also erected a billboard that said, "We are Buckeyes, not Bullseyes." The two parties ended up agreeing on a new contract, but the issues raised, from workplace violence to staffing ratios to concerns over AI, reverberate at hospitals across the U.S. Michelle Mahon is the director of nursing at nursing practice at the National Nurses United, which represents more than 225,000 members nationwide. It's the largest union and professional association of registered nurses in the U.S. Welcome to All Sides, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So one of the key issues for the Ohio State nurses and elsewhere is workplace safety. And your organization is working to help members create a safer environment. Can you talk to me about strategies to make hospitals safer for nurses?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, this is an issue that impacts nurses in literally every setting, and other healthcare workers as well. And of course, our care environments, our work environments, our patients' care environments, and that's really important to us as patient advocates. And so we know that the experts on preventing violence in our work environments is really important to involve direct care nurses and workers who are in those units to identify hazards as well as have prevention plans, right? Workplace violence is preventable. And so we know that really is a comprehensive plans that evaluate all of those potential hazards and crucially provide enough staffing to intervene and prevent violence from occurring to begin with is vital.
You note that hospitals are full of equipment and supplies that can be weaponized. Can you talk more about that? So it's not just stopping, a gun from coming into a hospital, but there's just things all around that can be a weapon.
Absolutely. One of the, it's important to know, like when we talk about what are we talking about here with workplace violence, is we are talking about, very potentially lethal incidents that involving weapons such as guns or knives. But really the more common type of workplace violence that we are seeking to prevent are biting, hitting, punching, and verbal assault and abuse. For patients and oftentimes they may be experiencing a psychological agitation as a result of a chemical imbalance or their illness. And these types of violence are preventable too. So we know that really looking around the environment, very common objects such as cords, IV poles, chairs, and of course, the other people's, the way people can use their body to inflict harm and their words also need to be evaluated and prevented.
Rick Lucas with the Ohio Nurses Association earlier in the show talked about how he wished there was more security. Sometimes when you call security, it can take 10 minutes for someone to get there. Is it even feasible for a hospital to have more security guards, like one on every floor, so that they're there and ready?
Really, we know that the majority of certainly adding security guards is one intervention. But we know that when we look at the systemic causes of violence, preventing violence, right? Security guards are wonderful assistance when violence is occurring. But our goal is to prevent it from occurring to begin with. And that is really important here. That violence is prevented by having proper staffing. Only 29% of nurses in our national survey reported that their employer has staff available at all times to respond to workplace violence, and only a mere 17% of nurses reported that their employer puts in additional staff to reduce the risk of violence. This is nursing staff that we are talking about, so that nurses are available to intervene before situations become crisis level. When patients or their families need to wait longer than they should to receive medications for pain, or when signs of increasing changes of mental status are happening, nurses need to be available and be there to make those interventions to prevent situations from escalating.
Now, some patients can become violent because of their medical condition or coming out of anesthesia. So it's not always necessarily intentional. But can you talk a bit about that? Because California has been held up as a gold standard when it comes to prevention standards. What does California have in place?
That's right. Well, there are two very important measures that we have secured in the state of California, which is an affiliate of National Nurses United. Regarding workplace violence, it is a workplace violence prevention standard, which OSHA has had called the gold standard. And so now we are advocating for similar legislation to be expanded nationwide to ensure that these prevention plans that involve direct care workers to identify the specific needs on a location-by-location, unit-by-unit basis would be implemented. California's workplace violence prevention plan is very successful, and California Nurses Association fought for many years. The nurses did showing demonstrations and others. After a very unfortunate incident, we began to really take this issue so seriously when one of our members was strangled with a lamp cord in a psychiatric unit. And this really amplified for us the need to have comprehensive plans. The other very important victory that contributes to safety for patients and for workers is the California minimum mandatory nurse-to-patient ratios mm-hmm. that set a limit to the number of patients that a nurse can care for at one time, as well as increasing those staffing levels based on the needs of the individual patient as determined by the nurse who's caring for the patient, as it should be. And so that law, if expanded, would save tens of thousands of lives across the nation. And what we found is after it was implemented in facilities in California, it resulted in a 30% reduction in occupational illness and injury, which is substantial, which would go, that pairing of interventions, of policy interventions, would do so much to not only keep nurses safe, but very importantly, also to keep patients and their families safe.
Now, you're talking about California. Is there some sort of federal standard? Would that be helpful to have a nurse-to-patient ratio be a federal standard?
We need a federal standard. I think if you ask literally any nurse in this nation, including nurses in California, this is a demand that nurses have been making for over three decades. There are literally hundreds of studies spanning not only the United States, but over 33 nations proving that more registered nurse staffing and these minimum staffing standards would save lives, keep nurses at the bedside, and bring those who are not working back. So this is really important intervention. So we propose, currently there is no limit on the number of patients a nurse can be made to care for at one time in the state of Ohio and in the majority of states across the nation. And so we do need, what we have is the proposal of nurse staffing standards for hospital patient safety. There are companion bills in both the Senate by lead author, Senator Jan Schakowsky, Senate Bill 1709, and in the House, H.R. 3415. These two bills are really important to advocate for, as well as the workplace violence prevention standard in the House. That is H.R. 2531 with the sponsor of Representative Joe Courtney, and in the Senate, 1232 by Senator Padilla. This legislation is really instrumental to saving patients' lives and keeping hospitals a place for healing as they should be.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the nursing profession with Michelle Mahan with the National Nurses United. Your organization does not advocate for metal detectors to be in place in every hospital through a federal mandate. Why not more metal detectors?
And we don't oppose them. What we're advocating here are for workers, nurses, to be directly involved to identify the needs of the individual site-specific interventions. These, as we discussed, that's because there are so many hazards beyond guns. So a comprehensive plan may include metal detectors, but we believe that this is not enough because it does little to prevent other types of violence that are happening, including throughout the facility, but certainly for many facilities, having a metal detector or increased security would be an effective, a potentially effective intervention for safety, but certainly not the only one. And so the reason we don't advocate for just a national standard that limits interventions such as only to a metal detector, we really know that we need much more because there is such an epidemic of violence really that needs to be addressed. 8 in 10 nurses have experienced at least one type of workplace violence within the past year, and nearly half of nurses reported an increase in violence in their unit in just the previous year. In contrast, only 3.8% of nurses reported that violence has decreased. So this is an epidemic that is escalating, and there are multiple types of violence. The most common are verbal abuse, being physically threatened, and being pinched or scratched or hit. So assault, as we've seen many high-profile news stories, assault by a patient or a family member with even just their own hands can cause serious harm. And so we know that these interventions must be comprehensive.
Rick Lucas with the Ohio Nurses Association said earlier in the show that, you know, there are metal detectors for like some of the entrances of the hospital. But if you come in through the EMS entrance, that's where that he was advocating for more protection there. Is that a national issue where if you come in through the EMS entrance, there's not a metal detector or there's no one with a wand to check for weapons?
Certainly, I would say, I would certainly defer to Rick Lucas and what he believes is needed, as we are advocating, right, is that the people who are there know what is needed. And if the nurses at Ohio State University believe that this intervention would make them safer, then I would trust that, right? We need to trust nurses and trust those that are working there. I would say this idea of metal detectors at the EMS bay is, you know, one that is probably not widespread due to the nature of the types of critical patients that are coming in. But certainly there are places where this safety intervention would be appropriate. And it's important to trust and listen to the nurses who work in those areas, for they are the ones who know what is needed to protect themselves and to protect patients.
We talked about staffing issues throughout the hour. And in Ohio, there actually are enough licensed nurses. It's just perhaps there's not enough pursuing bedside care. So that's where the gap is. Your organization does call it a staffing crisis when it comes to bedside care for hospitals. Can you explain the staffing picture nationwide? Is there a nursing shortage nationwide?
No, there's no nursing shortage. Please, if we can have anything from this moment, it's important to know that there are almost 1 million nurses in the registered nurses in the United States who could be working in nursing but are choosing not to. And this is true in the state of Ohio as well. It is really a care crisis because the conditions in hospitals and other direct care roles that are created by employers do not facilitate good nurses to practice in ways that are therapeutic, that they are currently injurious. And nurses are putting their license at risk when they have this overburden of responsibility of too many patients. Not only that, we already discussed that patients die and experience serious complications. This is, of course, injurious to our patients, but it causes moral injury in nurses when we work in a situation where we know we could have done something more to prevent a bad outcome, but didn't have the resources that were needed to do so. So staffing is really an important element. And as I said, it's one of the most researched interventions. And absolutely, we know that safe staffing saves lives, and that other types of solutions, such as staffing plans that are voluntary or public reporting, do not make the kind of differences that are needed. Unfortunately, we do need a mandate to hold employers accountable. We have tried many other methods, but they just don't do the job. So it's vital for nurses and for patients that there is a limit to the number of patients that a nurse cares for at one time.
Okay, we only have 30 seconds left, but I'll just ask it this way. So you're saying it's maybe not even that nurses aren't paid enough. It's that the conditions of working, there's not enough nurses. The hospitals aren't investing in that. So it's not even just pay that's keeping nurses away. It's the conditions of the place.
Absolutely not. It's working conditions, understaffing, and increased workplace violence are what are causing the staffing crisis that are creating the conditions that nurses just don't want to work in, that they just can't.
That was Michelle Mahan, Director of Nursing Practice at the National Nurses United, which represents more than 225,000 members nationwide. Michelle, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich.